The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So let's see. I am muted. Oh, I cannot unmute because the host is unmuting me. So can you hear me? Can we have a thumbs up? Oh, I see nodding heads. Great. I'm using a different mic. Can you hear? Is it the quality okay? Loud enough? Great. Wonderful. This is pretty special to be all together this way. Just one moment while I get everything arranged here. Okay. So, okay, so I'm here. So it's been one of the, I think I've said this already, it's been one of the delights, surprising delights, that this format brings at least me a lot of joy. I would have 3 months ago, someone said, you know, I think we should have you, Gil, on YouTube every morning, 5 mornings a week, in an empty room, looking at a camera. And I would have thought, no way, how could I do that? I just wouldn't be capable of something like this. And to my surprise, this has been a delight, and it really turned for me when I started seeing the chats and seeing people, good mornings and thank yous and wonderful comments. And there was a one point early on, like, I don't know, maybe in week two or something, maybe some of you might remember this, there was someone who seemed to have just found us on YouTube. And he wrote something like, this is the friendliest place on YouTube. And, you know, I hardly have ever been on YouTube, so I don't know what goes on. That really warmed my heart to have someone see it as a friendly place. And I certainly felt it that way. There was a visible feeling of being connected to a wider community of people, practitioners. And, you know, we have many more people who listen to us in Audio Dharma. And I've felt just tremendously inspired by all the Audio Dharma listeners we have and the people who listen to these talks a lot. But, you know, unless they come to IMC, I don't really have this any kind of ongoing connection. And so this YouTube has kind of opened me up now to this global community that we have. And so I'd be curious if you're willing to do that in the chat. I looked once or twice, a couple of times, in the analytics for the YouTube, who goes onto YouTube. We have this, and it seems like 70% of the people who do it, listen to or watch this YouTube channel of ours, do so from the United States. So 30% are from around the world. And I wonder if those of you who are outside the United States, be willing to write in the chat group what country you're listening from or you're located as you're doing this. That would be kind of fascinating to see. Canada and UK and Canada and Netherlands and Germany and Canada and Austria and Belgium, Chile and Ireland and then Canada. Yeah, Toronto and Scotland, Canada. Trumpland. Most of us are in Trumpland. Thailand, Indonesia, Argentina. Well, thank you. It's very nice to have the sense of a global community of people and practicing. And certainly as we continue, I would like to Switzerland, Madrid. I really enjoy doing this, and I'm planning to continue as long as it's sustainable. So those of you who appreciate these morning sittings, be reassured that the plan is to continue indefinitely. And someone told me that if I want to take a vacation, I just pre-record them. And also, I don't know how long I'll have things to say in the way that we've been doing it, but I'm certainly enjoying it. And I want to confess one thing to all of you about that maybe is a little interesting, is that once we started doing this online YouTube kind of thing, it felt right away that it was important to have some connection and so contact in the terms of we couldn't just sit down and meditate silently. I guess we could, but I felt like on YouTube it required, in order to really work for people, to have some guided meditation at the beginning. When we teach here at IMC, it's actually very rare on a Monday night or Sunday morning that I do any guided meditation. We just come together and sit in silence. And so I've been doing these guided meditations, and it's I don't have a really big repertoire of things to say, and so I'm just kind of trying to make it a little bit different every time, and trying to make it useful and for you all. So hopefully that's working out. But when I first was introduced to Buddhism and Zen, it was kind of like prohibited to do guided meditations. My Zen teacher said to me one day, "Now, we don't want to talk while people are meditating, because when you're meditating, you're a Buddha. And what would you say to a Buddha?" And so I like that a lot, the idea that this respect for people. And when I started to be a Vipassana teacher, I was in teacher training with Jack Kornfield. And I was left at a retreat, the only teacher there one evening at the retreat. And Jack told me that I had to do read like a little passage from a book, or do a guided meditation, do something, since in the evening in one of the sittings. So I brought a little book with me to read some nice, inspiring passage. And I just couldn't get myself to speak. So I never said anything that day, didn't do the assignment, because it was so against my kind of training and practice in Buddhism to speak while people meditate. So it's a little awkward still, figuring it out and doing it, but I imagine that it works well enough since you come back for more. So that was just a little thing. In order to make this a little interactive and also to learn from each other a little bit, who we are and what's going on here, we have a little survey. YouTube has surveys that are very easy to click on and fill out. And it'll take probably just a minute or two to fill it out. But we're going to post a survey now, and then we'll all see the results. So if that could happen, that would be great. There it is. And I'll fill it too. I need to scroll down to see the other ones, the questions. So, does anybody need more time? Maybe you can lift your hand, and I'll scroll through and see. It looks like I don't see any hands up. So then maybe we could see the results. And, it's wonderful to see some of you. I haven't seen you in a long time, and to see you this way is pretty cool. So we're currently located, and 93% from North America. So that's much higher than the Google Analytics usually. It might have something to do with the time, too. People, other places in the world are going to sleep or doing other things. How long you've been practicing? That's a nice range of different options. That's very nice. And do you listen to talks? And on Audio Dharma, 74% said yes, and 26% said no. And I'm one of those who said no. I don't listen to those talks. Are you interested in participating in an online day-long meditation retreat? Yes, 20% and 5% no. I guess most people don't know what it is or don't really care. And, here he is. Yes, I see, 67% said, quite a bit of people are interested enough I'm impressed. So we'll do a day-long at some point. Are you interested in more community-building events? Yes. 95%, great. So exactly what community-building events are, I don't know, but it meant for us as the YouTube community and people coming here. So these kinds of meetings, we can do this kind of meeting more often, maybe periodically, a Zoom meeting, and have a chance to gather together and have some kind of contact with each other and conversation. So what I thought we would do, as I said before, is that we would create little breakout groups, so you have a chance to meet randomly some of the people in this YouTube community with maybe groups of five or so, I thought, and take about 12, 13 minutes or so to introduce yourself, talk about where you're from or your practice or what really inspires you about meditation or insight meditation. So anything you want to share. Just mostly it's a chance to connect and know each other in some simple way. And then we'll come back together in this larger group. And then we'll take a period of try to do Q&A where I will. You can type some questions in the chat group. We'll teach you how to raise your hand if you don't know how. And then we'll just try to unmute you, and you can even ask the question out loud. So let's do the breakout groups, and then I'll see you again in a few minutes. So those of you who are on YouTube, I can read your chats while the people are meeting elsewhere. And so those of you who... So I don't know how many of you are watching on YouTube, but 36 people. So there's about, I think it was 290 people or so that were on Zoom, and there's a breakout group of groups of five now. I'm glad that you're still connected here to YouTube so you can get a little sense of what's going on, and hopefully you'll hear, I'll ask people to ask questions when we come back, and maybe some of them will speak loud enough they can get it on the mic. And if not, I will try to repeat the questions. And if any of you have on YouTube have some questions you'd like us to ask, you're welcome to bring it up on the chat, and I can try to keep an eye on here too. None of the breakout groups got the bonus skill. I was sent to a breakout group, and but somehow my computer wouldn't work and they couldn't hear me speak. So I don't know what that's about. You know, I don't usually look at myself on the computer when I'm giving the YouTube because my eyes aren't so good, so I zoom up the chat to keep an eye on that. So now I'm not doing that. I can see myself, and I can see a little bit of light show that people keep referring to. You know, usually it goes by me. And so it's kind of nice to see, you know, behind. And some people have commented about the flowers behind us. Behind me, there's silk flowers, and they never change. I think that at some point, when this shelter in place is over, we'll probably get something else to put up there. Part of the reasons for the silk flowers is historically, having these flowers so close to me, I have some kind of allergic reaction to some flowers, and I end up coughing a lot. So we usually don't have flowers for my sake up there. But I think that having the same silk flowers all the time are it's a bit much. And so let's see what's happening in the YouTube world. They're still in their groups. And yeah, Margaret, you never figured out how to break out. You mean in the breakout groups? Yeah, the breakout groups are on Zoom, and I guess some of you are having trouble finding the Zoom link. I apologize for that. You know, one of the dangers on Zoom is the Zoom bombers who end up. So we've done a variety of things to try to protect ourselves from that. So this is the first time we've done this, and maybe we'll figure out a easier way for everyone to participate in. And is there an IMC chat group? No, we don't have anything like that. We've done that some years ago. We had various kinds of email or chat groups that we had, but it turned out that they needed to be monitored. Unfortunately, over time, the language or some of the communication started to be a little bit difficult. But the idea that those of you who are new to Buddhism have a chance to check in with someone and talk with maybe a senior practitioner here or teacher, that's a nice idea. Maybe we can set up some means of a regular kind of a beginner's group that check with someone. And Margaret, you also wrote, I never found the What's New. Yeah, it's at the insightmeditationcenter.org website. And it's a kind of a section, very bottom of the webpage, near the bottom, halfway down or something. So if you're looking at a tablet or through a phone, maybe you can't, it's more difficult to see, you have to scroll down or something. But it's in the bottom right-hand side, And it's a whole section, and you have to kind of click on the IMC community meeting section there. So people are coming back. Hi, everyone. You guys, can you hear me again? It looks like maybe my mic was on, so I don't know if I was talking to YouTube, and maybe some of you could hear me. Because we have this YouTube channel is on as well, just in case people couldn't get into Zoom. So So was that nice to do that? Yeah? Great. And unfortunately, I got assigned to a room too, and somehow I couldn't figure out my computer too, so I could hear the people in my group. So I exited, and I would have liked to have met with you and hung out a little bit, and maybe in a future time. So if you would like, we could do some period of Q&A if you have some questions for me or about what we're doing here or IMC or anything. One person wrote the breakout group was too short. How many thought it was too short? How many thought it was just right? Just right? Okay. And so what about if you have any questions, I think it works this way. If there is a place where you can raise your hands, and I'm not really sure where that is myself, because I think I'm a host, so I don't have that ability. But if so let me okay. So Diana is kind of also hosting this. Diana, can you tell people where the hand raising is? Yeah, I don't hear you.
See in the order that people raise their hands.
Okay, so let's see, Wendy. I'm trying to unmute you. There. Yeah, Wendy.
See in the order that people raise their hands.
Oh.
Okay, so
wait a minute here. Excuse me while I'm figuring out technology, because I have YouTube on as well to try to support the YouTube people, and I need to turn YouTube off so I don't, the sound at least. Okay, so now, okay, so let's see. Can Wendy, can you talk now? Yeah, I don't hear you. Oh, it keeps putting the volume. Okay, Wendy, can you talk now? Oh, there we go.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, hi. Hi. I just wanted to know if we could have a retreat, or like a one-day retreat that sort of trains us at home to go on longer retreats.
Oh, nice idea. So kind of kind of introduction to residential retreats or over
at
a day. No, oh, nice. Or introduction to how to do a longer retreat by yourself, you mean?
Well, not by myself so much. Just, you know, there's retreats that are online now. And what I'm nervous about is doing a retreat at home that is participating with IRC or other places. And I'm sort of nervous about doing that, even though I've been on retreats at IRC. But I'm nervous about doing one at home and maybe cheating, like watching TV. And I kind of want to do a one-day retreat that's specific to training me or anyone how, you know, to kind of stay faithful to a retreat.
Oh, nice.
Sort of a training for a longer one.
Very nice. Very nice. I like the idea. One thing that you might find useful is, so we have a retreat center, as you know, Wendy, called the Insight Retreat Center. It's in, in Santa Cruz. And this is for everyone to hear. So, and that is that starting this coming Wednesday, every Wednesday, we're going to offer a mini retreat. And someone told me we should call it a micro retreat. And it's about two and a half hours where we'll do a Wednesday morning sit hosted by the retreat center. And there'll be a little introduction to the retreat center, and the resident volunteers will host it, and different IRC teachers will teach for each of those morning sits on Wednesday. And I'll do the first one on the 27th. And so that's something that also you can kind of get warmed up on these shorter ones. And it might not be what you're asking for exactly, but it might also give you some comfort with online retreats by doing this in little dosages at first on Wednesday morning.
Yeah, I'd like that. But also what I was thinking about too is just with the food preparation for the longer ones.
Yeah.
Things like that too.
Yeah, so it's almost like not so much a day long, but almost like it could be like a particular meeting to have a discussion about all the details in a way that's more in depth than we provide now and answer questions. And so this is a great concern. We'll think about it. And I think your idea is a good one.
Thank you.
So Gary Bloom. Let's see. Okay. Oh, so, okay. Gary. Oh, you're still muted. Now you're unmuted.
How's that?
Yeah.
First, I just really want to thank you personally. Just these mornings have been really essential for our well-being and progress. I'm just really curious about your personal take on reincarnation. Is it something you accept? Is it a metaphor? Where does it fit in your personal beliefs?
Yeah. It doesn't really have a role at all in my personal belief. I don't really orient myself to that or think about it much, or it doesn't really inspire me or dispirit me. It's an idea that's out there. I know people believe in it, but I have no reference point for my own practice for it. And so it just I was engaged in Buddhism for all these years. My teachers in this country, in Japan, in Asia, it was kind of a non-issue for the way I was introduced to the practice, and it remained that way for me. So that's kind of, so you don't find me talking about it very much or showing much interest in it. And it might seem a little disrespectful for those people who believe in it, but I'm just given my condition, how I've been conditioned and stuff, that it's not really a concern of mine. Okay, great. So, Catherine.
Yes. I was interested, first of all, thank you. And I've been really enjoying the morning meditations and all the different entries or takes into meditation. I was, yesterday morning, you talked about feeling the space around us and then feeling one's body in the center of the space and then feeling the breathing. And I was noticing that I habitually only feel the space in front of me and not so much in other directions. And I presume when you said circle, you mean sphere, like all around.
Yeah.
I was wondering sort of how to increase that experience or strengthen it?
Yeah, that's a nice question. And I think, in reflecting on myself with your question, I'm probably when I feel or sense the space around me, it's not a total sphere. I probably have places where I don't really, notice. But overall, I feel it kind of maybe like a big dome all around me. And so I don't know what you can do. Maybe you could, it's partly this idea of space around us with the eyes closed. It's partly an act of imagination. So you might want to scan through the edges of your body where those places where the space is not, the edges of where those body, and feel the bodies best you can, like in the back rib cage, in the back of your head, wherever it is, and then see if once you feel the physicality of the body there, then maybe you can feel that which is not body on the other side of it.
Yes.
Great. Okay, thank you. So, Isabel.
Yay! Hi, Gil.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, first, like, you have been the biggest gift I got in this quarantine sheltering. It feels so delightful. I'm bow gratitude for you and your practice and everything you do for all of us.
Thank you.
So just to give you some context, you know, I'm very deep into the Dharma and also happen to be a psychologist. So the question I have, like, you might have heard, like, I think Jack Kornfield in one of his books has this quote he uses, which is, wisdom says we're nothing. Love says we're everything. Between these two, we love happens, or life happens, something like that. But, you know, there's this idea of love that really creates connection. And Buddhist tradition, sometimes people misunderstanding of this nothingness, sometimes meaning not really connecting or relating fully with something. I don't know, like maybe I think it will be more difficult for me to explain, but if you have something to say around it, I'm just curious.
Yeah, yeah, great, thank you. I think that the way that I prefer to understand this, the easiest and the one I think in some ways maybe for me the most meaningful is when I think of the nothing being the absence of clinging. That really that's kind of the primary reference point. And it's a little bit too easy when with ideas of nothing or emptiness for it to start going into some kind of metaphysical interpretation of life. And but this early Buddhism, that my reference point is very psychological in nature. And so what is it psychologically that's the nothing? It's a nothing, no clinging. And then when there's no clinging, a lot of things we cling to, some of them are just constructs, ideas, and they might go away as well. But we don't try to kind of make it more cosmic or more metaphysical. Just the absence of clinging is so profound. And with the absence of clinging, then there's no barriers to the heart. And then our capacity to love can flow, can radiate, can glow, you know, infinitely. But then if you try to grab onto that love, that diminishes the love.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you. Very nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you.
So, Magnus.
Kind of partially answer my question, but so my question is, how does one reconcile applying a lot of effort towards one's goals with not having attachment and not striving?
Ah, nice question. Well, you know, first of all, I'd like to say it's not a crime to have attachment and striving. And so, you know, we don't want to be too, you know, pure about it. A little bit of attachment, a little bit of striving might actually be useful, given the alternative. If striving and attachment is better than the alternative, by all means, a little bit is okay. And then the practice is self-correcting. So over time, you'll realize at some point, oh, this is not serving me anymore, and to let go of it. But it's possible to have a lot of to give a tremendous priority to the practice. It has more priority than anything else in our lives, for example, for some people. And that prioritization doesn't have to be any attachment involved with it. It's just the most important thing we have. And because we give priority to it, then we live it, we practice it, we engage in it much of the time. And it's kind of, again, as I said before, a self-protecting kind of path. Because if we're mindful, we'll notice the limitations we have of if the striving is limiting us, if we're holding on or pushing too hard, it will see how that's not useful for us. it with enough mindfulness and sensitivity, and then we'll relax it. And so, but it's possible to put a tremendous amount of relaxed effort, persistent effort, inspired effort into the practice, and you're protected because it's kind of like you're putting a lot of effort into paying attention to be relaxed. Does that make sense? Oh, did you get? I guess you got unmute. You got muted. So let me see if I can unmute. Yeah. Okay. Oh. Okay. There you go. Okay. Does that make sense? Does that make sense enough?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And then we have Barb.
Oh.
Hey, Barb. How nice to see you.
Hi, Gail.
Hi.
So wonderful to reconnect after
yes.
being away from California. Wonderful to see you.
Great.
I'm taking another course from a Tibetan teacher, Tibetan Lama, and he's talking about compassion practice and how to connect with a feeling of empathy, and then, I mean, imagining another person who's suffering, connect with that feeling of empathy, and then use that feeling of empathy to power sort of the wish for the other to be relieved from pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that when I do that, there's sort of in the background, this big shadow starts growing of mental shadow of like, you know, all the sadness and frustration and thoughts. And so I'm thinking that then the practice ought to be to turn and look at that shadow for a while and then sort of go back and forth, use the shadow as fuel for wishing the other well. But can you comment on that?
Oh, yeah. It's pretty common to any kind of Brahmavihara practice of loving kindness, of compassion, will somehow highlight that the opposite is present for us. And hopefully we, in a certain way, welcome that as good information to have about ourselves. It's been revealed, some tendency we have. And one option you have then is to turn your mindfulness away from the compassion or the loving kindness and really bring attention to what you're calling the shadow side, the challenges you have. Maybe that's what needs the compassion. That's what needs the kindness for a while. And really be present for what's going on in you. And bring whatever's in the shadow out of the shadow and hold it in the warm, open palm of awareness and work through it and let it somehow get resolved. And then it might be easier to return to the compassion work.
So in my experience, it doesn't get resolved. You know, the shadow just keeps going and going and going. You know, I sometimes just say, okay, I just need to let that go for a while and focus on the other. Otherwise,
yeah.
I'm not going to get to it for 5 years.
Yeah. Well, sometimes meditation is not the place to work through some of the shadow stuff. So it's possible that even something as simple as journaling about it will bring out and clarify what's really going on for you. Or sometimes it's having some kind of regular contact with a Dharma teacher where you're actually doing specific practices to focus on it, or to work with a therapist or a spiritual counselor or a good friend. You know, you go for a walk and talk about it and really draw it out and find out what's going on. Maybe there's a deep need it represents. And until you recognize what that need is, it might still be there and be unchanged. Okay, Barb.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, let's see. So Tom, let's see, I'm trying to, there we go. Tom and Dana.
Hi,
Jill. Hi. Hey.
It's my question as usual. These talks have been so important to Tom and me and also to my Dharma Lunch lady friend.
Uh-huh.
The lady friend, we have a question to you.
No, wait, you know, you broke up a little bit. Could you put yourself, turn off the video while you're asking the question, and that way I can hear it clearly.
Sure.
In the bottom left corner?
Yeah.
There, great. So
Tom and I love hearing your talks. My Dharma lunch lady friend and I have been wishing that there could be a segment that sort of we can carry with us during the day, maybe a little bit more accessible to sort of accompany the deep dive into what the suttas said.
So can you be more specific what you mean by that?
I guess the one I remember is the line of ants metaphor.
Uh-huh.
Where you said you see it as a whole, and then if you look at it, the individual experiences. But I don't know, just some musings on how that might apply in a daily life. A little less eyebrow every now and then.
Oh, I see. Yes, yeah.
And you've done it in the past many, many times. So, but even if you don't do that, I'm so grateful to you for these what you're doing. And we listen to you every day.
So what I understand you're saying is you'd like to have a little bit of teachings that are much more practical and applicable in your daily life. Well, that's completely reasonable. And I'll give some thought to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Gil.
And so, Richard. So, Oops. Oh, I just did something. Richard, can you try? I think I might have lowered your hand by mistake. So, Richard, if you can find yourself, raise your hand again. Oh, then you're probably at the bottom of the hand-raising list. Let's see. Oh, there's a lot of people raised hands. So I'm sorry about that, Richard, that I lowered your hand by mistake. And so I don't see you coming back up again. So we'll see. I'll look for you again. Maybe take the next one now. So Christy, and I'm not going to unmute you because I seem to... Can you unmute yourself? Because I seem to have to... No, you can't. Okay, let me see if I can do it here. Oh. Okay. Christy.
Okay, am I unmuted? Can
yes.
you hear me?
Yes.
Thing on my screen that says I can't unmute myself, but that's okay. I don't have a question, but in our small group, we talked a lot about your guided meditations that you've been doing in the mornings and how normally for all of us, I guess, in the small group, guided meditations sometimes feel intrusive. But with the ones you were doing in the morning, not at all. They are really wonderful and really helped take me deeper, and we all felt that way, and we just wanted you to have that feedback.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you very much. Because, you know, it's a little bit strange to do guided meditation with, you know, not getting the feedback of people in the room, and so I appreciate getting what you're saying. Thank you. So then we have Chris.
Morning, everyone. It's great to see so many faces. I found IMC online maybe 7 years ago, and I've been following the talks and the recordings, and it's great to kind of be part of the group here this morning for the first time. And thanks for everything you've been doing, Gil. I do have a question about meditation. And I've been meditating on and off irregularly since the 80s, probably. And I'll get to points where I feel like I'm just kind of stuck in a rut where I'm not really getting any further or not making any progress. And I live in central Wisconsin, so it's a long way to go to find a Dharma teacher. But one of the questions I have is when you find yourself doing that same meditation over and over for weeks at a time, and you realize that you're doing that, how do you break that and get to some other useful point without having someone to really talk to with guidance? If that makes sense.
Yeah. First, there is in Wisconsin a wonderful teacher named Santi Caro. I don't know exactly where he is. I think it's called Liberation Park, his little retreat center. You might check him out if he's not too far away. I think it's called Liberation Park. And so there's a few things you can do if you feel you reach the plateau on your own. I say two things that you might try. First is to turn and look at the plateau itself. What's the actual feeling, felt sense in you of that something is, you know, you reach that plateau? Is it a feeling of being blocked? Is it a feeling of resistance? Is it boredom? What exactly is it? And if you bring a lot of mindfulness to the very feeling, the sense what's going on, that might open something up. It might be something that needs attention there. The other thing is to, a little bit different direction, is to focus on more concentration. And concentration can happen two ways. One is do the practice you usually do, but for a while, do more of it. If you meditate every day for half an hour, maybe meditate for an hour, or meditate three times the day for half an hour. Just do more, and sometimes the more gets you over the hump. Or dedicate a day to a personal one-day sitting, for example. And that might get you over the hump. The other thing you might try is to actually do a formal concentration practice for a while. Just focus on the breath and nothing else. And see if you can develop samadhi. And that will sometimes take you to a different level where the mindfulness practice can feel like it's flowing again for you.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
And thanks everyone else for joining. It was nice meeting you.
So then Wigginton, or David. Yes.
Hi, Gil.
Hi.
Thanks so much for what you're doing. And I first of all want to acknowledge my friend Phil Heller in Redwood City, who's the one who told me about these morning sessions. So thank you, Phil, and thank you, Gil. My question is, for those of us who do not live near Redwood City, I happen to live near Sebastopol in Sonoma County, but the person who spoke last was from Wisconsin. We have people from other parts of the world. I'm hoping that once the shelter-in-place practice has ended, I hope that you will continue to doing these morning sessions, even when it's no longer necessary for us to be isolated like this. So my question is, what are your intentions or plans regarding this weekday morning sangha?
Yeah, I really enjoy this. And so my plan is to continue it indefinitely. And so that's no clear sense that there's going to be an end. Ever since I started thinking about somehow supporting other people in meditation practice, the original idea was to just have a morning sitting for people. And have the meditation doors open so people can come sit in the morning. So now we're doing it, except it's the YouTube door. So to me, it's very meaningful to sit with people in the morning and start this way and support people to do that every morning. So I think we'll continue doing it and indefinitely. And if it starts getting a little bit difficult for me to keep doing, we'll think creatively about how to continue it. Maybe other people can step in also and share with it. And then I'll use it's not your answer to your question, but I'll use your question as a prompt to let you all know that IMC has a number of people trained to be Dharma leaders and who do some teaching and support people and meet with people to talk about their practice. And some of them are available now to start doing online practice discussion, group practice discussion, where you can come to them and bring up some of your practice questions, like the gentleman just before about the plateau. And if you go on the IMC website again, I think it's just underneath the announcement for this YouTube meeting, this Zoom meeting we have. There's a IMC practice discussion groups, and there's a link. You can sign up for them. There's times and you can sign up for. And I think they're groups of five people. So it might be in one way, another way to continue and have some contact and support from our community here. So thank you, David. So Lisanna.
I think you may have just answered my question, suggestion. Thank you, by the way, for all of this. And I wonder, having created this huge sangha, it might be too big of an ask for our little center, but is there a way to help people create friends groups through Zoom? Can we somehow facilitate people meeting each other to have their own little mini sanghas and meet?
Oh, well, that's a nice idea. So let me think about it a little bit and talk to people about it. And maybe it's something that can grow out of this. Maybe we should have a few more of these kinds of full group meetings like this and have breakout groups at and then at some point maybe we can organize smaller groups that they can meet this way that come out of this YouTube community we have. So I'll think about that. I appreciate it a lot. Great, thank you. So then, Nancy. You're unmuted, Nancy.
Okay, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much. I've, like many people, found meditating a little bit hard to do during this shelter in place. Huh. And so the morning meditations have just been a great anchor
Good.
For me through this time. And my question is, when shelter in place, when this whole thing got started, you talked about it as a retreat, and you talked about like the progression of a retreat, how you know it starts where you feel a little agitated, and then you settle, and then there are like moments of beauty, and then there are moments of emotion, and it reminded me of the retreat I attended at IRC, which unfolded exactly the way that you said afterwards. But I'm thinking that sort of that progression depends, and you were kind of likening that to maybe what we're going through a little bit. And but I'm thinking that kind of depends on knowing how long it's going to be. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that mindset of retreat and the flow of the experience, given what we're encountering now of not knowing how long the retreat.
Oh, yes. Oh, did we just lose you? So I'll answer the question, but I think Nancy just got off. Maybe just the hand got lowered. So hopefully you're listening to this. So the... So I said I gave a Sunday talk at the beginning of Shelter in Place about what we could learn from the process of being on retreats with some of what goes on in shelter in place. And some people thought I was saying that it was like a retreat, that somehow that they should do a retreat during shelter in place. What I was trying to say was even if you weren't doing a formal retreat, some of what we learn about the process of how a retreat unfolds might be relevant for everyone who's going through the shelter in place, and how there is a kind of tends to be a pattern that unfolds. And now that it's so long for this, much longer than most of the retreats we do, it might be useful to revisit that and to say that it kind of goes in waves. And a long formal retreat, there'll be some of these patterns get repeated, but at a deeper level. It's like, imagine there's like different levels of practice, and each level kind of goes through the same cycle, but at a deeper and deeper level. And so at some point, the beginning challenges of a retreat or the frustration, and now with the shelter in place, I mean, a lot of people are now more getting really tired and weary of it. Some people depressed about how long it's going. Some people are getting really irritated real easily. And what we would do on a regular retreat is see this as a really important part of the process, that this is the reactivity that's going on, and that you've come, now we're touching into even deeper level in ourselves than we were touching into at the beginning. and the weeks of kind of being quiet and being more reclusive, and it's this kind of life has set the stage to reveal something, a tendency that normally is hidden, and it's seen in greater clarity. And so rather than being discouraged on a retreat, we say, oh, this is important now. This is valuable to bring my attention to this. And to realize you don't have to be stuck there. You don't have to give it authority, which is very important, that you don't have to think that this is the truth, or, you know, I can't handle this. Or give it authority means that it's in charge. It says, yes, yes, everyone's wrong now because everyone's irritating me, and the world needs to be changed. I need to blame people. Rather, what is your contribution to this? What's going on in you that's prompting that way of thinking? And to delve deeper in and practice with those, because the reactivity is an activity of the mind. And to begin taking responsibility for that activity and coming to the other side and settling it and having fresh eyes, a fresh heart that's not being motivated by that, helps us to be much wiser about how to go through these difficult times. So hopefully that was appropriate answer. So we have here, Paris, is that the name? Maybe if you can pronounce, let's see. Yes. Parissa. Parissa, great. I can't, my eyes don't work so well, so I can't see the small print.
I have a question about when you talk about the craving that leads to rebirth.
Uh-huh.
And my question is that in the Buddhist practices, we hear so much about the preciousness of human birth. And so is it the craving that is leading to the suffering? Because I don't believe that you're saying that we shouldn't value a human birth. So I have a question about
that. It's a very reasonable question you're asking, a very good one, and I don't know if I have the proper response to it, but I think that idea of the precious human birth, that teaching is meant to encourage us to use this lifetime for practicing in a deep way, and whatever practice means for you, and it's not like, you know, this is a precious human birth, so organize your life to be reborn as a human again. And in that kind of worldview of rebirth, that there's no guarantee you're going to come back as a human being. You might come back as a worm, and or worse. And so, and this is the lifetime you have to practice. So practice well here. And then when we die, the theory around this rebirthing is that somehow, when we die, there's something inside or something that exists that continues in the form of a momentum of craving that reaches over into the next life and grabs on to the next birth. And without that craving and grabbing on, then you're not going to get reborn. And instead of being reborn, you're free. And it's, and exactly what that means to be free when there's no birth is not answered.
I see. Thank you.
Great. And yeah.
So much. This made the quarantine worthwhile.
Thank you. I love hearing that. So, Richard, you're back. So let's see. You're unmuted. So, Richard, please.
You can hear me now, Gil?
Yes. Hi.
Oh, nice to see you.
Likewise.
So I have a simple question.
Yeah.
Express the wish that all beings should be happy.
Yes.
And what I want to know is, when you say all beings, are we talking about all human beings, or is it broader than that? Are we talking about humans in a broader sense?
Oh, I'm certainly meaning broader, to all living beings, but I don't think about it too rationally. I don't try to analyze exactly what I mean by that. Certainly the, mammals and whatever beings can be happy, I want them to be happy. And but I don't, I don't analyze it, because it's more of a feeling of the heart. If I say, have this wish that all humans be happy and feel what goes on inside of me, and then I kind of have this wish, may all beings be happy, it's broader, it's wider. It's like, almost like I open more widely, or I get more peaceful when I consider all things without any barriers to it, without any limiting it to any category, like to humans. So for me, it has that, it's just so good to do it that broadly. And I never really thought too much exactly what I mean.
But when you say beings, you're not limiting it to human.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Great. So now we can go back up to the top. So Jean.
Hi.
Hi.
It's really nice to hear you every day for the last few weeks from Switzerland.
Yes, I can see behind. I see behind you.
Yeah, I appreciate you're doing this early in the morning because here it's 4 in the afternoon. That's really convenient for me, and I hope you keep it up. I really do. I'm pretty new at this meditation, and I was wondering if it's okay. I don't know the do's and don'ts, you know, of meditation too much, other than what you've instructed over the last couple of weeks. So is it okay to sing a song to oneself if it's short and has lyrics that are intended to guide you back to the breath and to the resting in the here and now? Or is that a dumb idea?
Oh, no, I think it could be a very skillful thing to do. I've done that. I've been on some of my longer retreats. I had a particular line of a song that I kind of sang to myself at the beginning of every sitting as a way of kind of, the lyrics kind of reminded me to settle in deeply. It was a line, I got a whole lot of love. And I would sing that, got a whole lot of love, and then I would hum out, or something like that. And I would just settle in. And anything's okay, provided it's helpful. And so if the goal is to develop your meditation and get concentrated and mindful and clear, you have a standard by which to measure yourself by. And so you try different things, and if it's supportive, by all means. If you every 2 minutes you're doing your song, you probably, by trial and error, you're going to learn you don't really get really settled and concentrated. It keeps you kind of activated. So you have to kind of use yourself as your own teacher through trial and error and see what supports you. And you're the arbitrator of that.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And it really has been useful to kind of get over the anxiety of this period to do the daily meditation with you. And I've been using it to keep myself from craving. And it's been very, very helpful. And so I just wanted to thank you for that. And I think you've also made it easier to really focus and concentrate on what's really happening instead of just the thoughts bouncing around. And
great.
I think you've even improved my cello playing.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Bravo.
Gene, great, great. So we'll take a couple of more. So Gagan, is that how you pronounce it? Let's see. Let me see if I can unmute you.
Yes,
there we go. Gagan, is that right?
It's Gagan, yes.
Hi.
Very nice to meet you. Thank you so much for all your morning meditations and brightening up my day since this quarantine has started. So thank you so much. I actually have a question around what Barista was asking. It's been past 2 weeks, this topic or this concept of craving leading to rebirth has coming up. And every time you mention it, I can't try to, I'm trying to understand it, but it's not sinking really well with me. And I'm hoping that you can shed some more light into this, what you mean by that. You tried to explain it when Teresa was asking that question.
Yeah.
You can just expand a little bit on that.
So I think that it's a very central idea in probably all schools of Buddhism. And it's, if you go to most Buddhist countries in Asia, I think the rebirth is a kind of central tenet of their worldview. And so it's a concern. And it's not just Buddhist, but also at the time of the Buddha, there were other religious traditions of his time that, is, you know, that the idea of rebirth was very important. And the goal was to not get reborn, because there was some notion that if rebirth is just endless cycles of birth and death and birth and death, a lot of those lifetimes are going to involve tremendous amount of suffering. And even if one particular lifetime might be nice, there's no guarantee that we're not going to just go through challenges over and over again. And so the and so the idea is to get off that wheel, to no longer do the cycles of birth and death. And so it's a classic idea in Buddhism, and there are particular teachings addressing this, and one of the interpretations of the Four Noble Truths addresses this very specifically. Some people prefer to understand this idea of rebirth metaphorically. That is not really... They prefer to understand it as really referring to the constant birth and death moment by moment of attachment, of identity, of becoming. And so they want to become free in some way of that constant preoccupation, constant recycling that goes on. Where they get tired of constantly asserting and making and wanting and doing some people interpret it that way. So does this answer your question, or is this not to the point? So you're welcome to ask again. Oh, you got muted again, so let me see. Okay. Nope. Okay. Please go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, no, this helps a little bit. I would be honest, like, you know, it's just still, like, the concept is not very clear to me, but yeah. That's okay. I think your explanation is fair enough.
Right. And some of this Buddhist idea of rebirth lacks clarity. One of the things that lacks clarity is the mechanism by which it happens. What is it that gets reborn? And how does this happen? And there's no really good answer for this. I mean, they say craving is what gets reborn, but the momentum of it. But as the gentleman asked earlier, this is not a very particularly important idea for me. So I'm very happy to present Buddhist teachings without much focus on this idea of rebirth. It's just that in these weeks, talking about the different interpretations of the Four Noble Truths, it felt important to mention this is actually one of the important interpretations that tradition has. And so for that reason, I bring it up. But I'm not bringing it up like that this is something you have to believe in.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. So Bailey... Hi.
Thank you so much for making yourself available in this way. It's been really nice. My question was related to your little dharma yesterday. You mentioned like two of the factors with experiencing nirodha is knowledge and true knowledge. And I was just like, that was interesting to me. And like the concept is interesting, but like, is that something that like in our own experience of that we experience, you know, every time we have an insight into nirodha, how can we, like, what does it feel like to have knowledge versus true knowledge?
Oh, yeah, I can't really know the difference. But true knowledge is basically the knowledge that's, that under, that word, it's probably vidya. It has to do with the particular kind of understanding that is liberating in itself. It's kind of the recognition of liberation. And what ordinary knowledge is, separate from that, is maybe just knowing that this is really, really a good thing to experience. To have this insight into inconstancy, this is useful. And then when that insight is deeper, it becomes true knowledge in the sense that it's true for the purposes of liberation. So a person has a sense of the liberative possibility there. That's okay. Great. Well, my friends, I apologize to all of you for your hand up for a long time. But I think it's time to stop. I really appreciate that this chance to be with you and have together like this. And I think we should do this again on some kind of regular basis. And how regular, I don't know whether. But you know, these Fridays periodically is a great thing to do, and I value it. And we can maybe develop a little pattern of how to do this in a nice way. And some of the requests for other things that you asked today were heard, and in relationship to this here, the request for some other breakout groups where you can meet each other in a more friend way, a little bit longer. That's a lovely idea. So we'll think about these ideas, and I'm looking forward to more contact with all of you and the continuing this early morning in California event. So thank you all very, very much, and until next time, bye-bye. So I guess we have some of you still on YouTube, and I hope this was worked okay for you. I'm a little apologetic there too that the focus was on the Zoom more than you, but I hope you can kind of tag along a little bit and got some sense of what was going on and feel part of it. And if you, you know, maybe we can continue, when we do Zoom meetings again, continue with the YouTube option for people who don't want to be on Zoom, if this works well enough. And then, and hopefully in the future, if you want to be on Zoom, you'll find your way there. So thank you so much. And I thank you also for this, our time together, and look forward to next week together. Bye-bye.